everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in? This is The Run Through. I'm Chloe Mel.
And I'm Choma Nardi.
This is a big week, Choma. It is your first cover for British Vogue. Let the Choman Empire begin. Can you tell us about it?
It feels surreal. Yeah, it feels great. I actually picked up the issue and looked at it for the first time today, the first issue off the presses, and it felt kind of emotional, you know, flicking through it. And I feel really proud of it. So yeah, it's an exciting day. I should say that the cover star is FKA Twigs, a woman I've admired for a long time and someone who brings together two of my biggest passions, fashion and music. And it was such a pleasure to interview her. She let me into her home, which was, you know, a magical sanctuary. I walked in and she had about 50 candles lit. So it was literally like a chapel.
Oh, it sounds like such a fire hazard.
I was so into it though. It was definitely a fire hazard, but it was a beautiful fire hazard.
Oh my God, it's rivaling the Bedudio for you for best interview
location. Oh my God,
location.
It was. It literally rivals the Bedudio. Then we went to a studio, she played me music. I met her very handsome boyfriend and went into their studio, and it was done over a couple of days. And we had a good conversation as well. We had a great conversation for the podcast. And I learned even more about her. I learned that she wrote some of the music, the new music, in the restrooms of the club where she was inspired in Prague.
I mean, I loved that part of your interview where she's talking about the etiquette of club going in Prague and mosh pit etiquette. I was like, good grief.
I know. I wish I had that. You always are like, oh, I wish I had that for the story now. But it was kind of a good addendum, right? A different, you know, to the story. But yeah, we got deep on club culture, didn't we?
Yeah, we really did.
But first, we have my dear colleague, Giles Hattersley, the European Features Director at British Vogue, here with us. And to be honest, I could not have gone through this wild ride without him, because he's been a real rock for me and helped bring this issue to life, and also did one of the other amazing stories in the issue that he's going to be talking about, which is with Billy Piper. Fantastic interview and profile. Welcome, Giles.
Oh, thank you so much.
Also, I would like to note that Choma had a big week last week. She was on the cover of the UK's The Times magazine.
Moving on.
Really Choma's moment. The Vogue group chat was a flutter with this news. So I hope everyone
The Nardi family chat was also a flutter with
news. I bet.
So, yes. You know, I was so fortunate because I was interviewed by someone who'd known me since I was 17. You know, Polly Vernon, who's dear friend and mentor and was my boss and put up with my bad transcribing skills. And yeah, so it was a special moment. But I'm pretty ready to reveal the actual cover, which is way more important. And I'm like ready to show people the work, which I think is the most important part.
Big week for Choma. Twigs cover, Times cover. What else?
I did want to ask Giles about the big news of the week, which in the UK, you cannot escape it, because it feels like every which way we turn, it's about Kate Middleton and this in this picture.
Well, I mean, that is indeed true.
It's so strange, the obsession.
Choma's brilliant first issue of British Vogue is kind of falls under the umbrella of a kind of like a homecoming in many ways, and is a real look at kind of Britain today and in all of its kind of warmth, style, and kind of, I would say, madness as well. And there's certainly some royal themes running through the issue, and it feels totally appropriate to be launching it into the world when Britain is having one of its classic and periodic kind of meltdowns in the face of its royal family.
Well, you know, I'm going to ask what you guys think from the UK, because we were talking about it in our stand-up meeting this morning, and
it does feel like a misfire of PR management. Like, is the palace to blame here? Like, it just feels like this has not been the way a narrative maybe could have best have been unspooled around this.
I'd say there's two things at play, probably. On the one hand, you know, I mean, modern comms are a mighty beast in which lots of people have good weeks and bad weeks. But I would also say it's the audience, too. Like, we are insane.
Yeah,
right?
We are. I mean, I feel like it's been the social media memes. It's been the kind of wild conspiracy theories that fan the flames here, no?
Yeah, a woman has major surgery in mid-January and then, like, clocks off for a bit. Mm. You know, I guess it's a different situation that she lives in. It's a very public role. It's a publicly funded role. There's lots of legitimate questions around it. But in another way, a woman had major surgery and has a few weeks off. And yet, here we are.
I mean, the conspiracy theories have really... It's been quite interesting to watch.
It would be a good episode of The Future Crown, though, I think, this one. I think this would be...
Yeah.
This would work well.
Peter Morgan's at home being like, oh, shit, I shouldn't have ended that.
I think also, like, I don't know, maybe this is just me, but I'm definitely of the mindset that a cack-handed, like... photo edit that you plonk on Insta feels very relatable and humanizing to me. I feel like we've all been a couple of clicks away
totally
from doing that.
I see that on our headlines there's stuff about Prince Andrew and the Epstein scandal. Is there new stuff?
Oh, yes, actually.
Oh, yes. Well, this is a nice segue.
Chloe, the fact that you mentioned Peter Morgan is slick,
is
slick,
he
slick.
Involved?
So we have, on top of the amazing Twigs interview that Choma's done and that spectacular cover, one of the other pieces in the issue, which I was lucky enough to do myself, was going to meet the amazing actress Billie Piper, who is starring in Peter Morgan's first post-Crown project called Scoop, which is a Netflix film, kind of a very tight 90 minutes, set around the securing of the Prince Andrew interview with Emily Maitlis.
Oh, yes, and Gillian Anderson's in it too, yeah?
Gillian plays Emily, extraordinary effect, and Billy plays the real-life fixer, like booker, talent booker, on Newsnight, which was the show that got the interview. So it was super fascinating to go and talk to Billy about Scoop and that kind of moment. I mean, that was... You know, in some ways, there's absolutely not parallels because there's, you know, the Prince Andrew situation, the Epstein saga was a heinous and proven crime against, you know, so many young women. Watching how those kind of news moments and especially the kind of nuclear dust that the royals put on everything explode into, especially through the internet, is like so powerful. And that Scoop really kind of like, you know, really nails that.
Is it a movie or a show?
It's a movie. So it's a 90 minute, but it'll be straight to Netflix, coming on April 5th.
Okay.
It's kind of three amazing women at the center of it. It's the Sam McAllister character, who's the booker. Emily Maitlis is the kind of interviewer who, like, you know, from the second she, like, sees it coming, knows it's going to be, like, this sort of career-defining moment. And then it's this extraordinary performance from a British actress called Keely Hawes, who's actually the real-life wife of Matthew McFadyen from Succession.
Mm.
She plays Amanda Thirsk, who is the real-life former private secretary of Prince Andrew, who... genuinely believes that somehow through the like transformative power and intimacy of television that people will just see, you know, the kind of good-natured, nice guy, royal, you know, they'll put all the kind of Epstein stuff behind him, and it could not be further from the truth as to what happens. Such an interesting piece. So yeah, it was fascinating to talk to Billy all about that.
Oh, so excited.
Chloe, last week that braiding package exploded on the internet, and congratulations.
Oh my gosh, I was so happy
so
when you wrote me
good
about it.
It just made me smile. I just thought, oh, this is like, you know, I don't know, it was just something so simple but beautiful, you know, and to spotlight everyday women, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe I should tee this up by saying, you know, this was a mammoth task. There was this beautiful braiding stories from around the world. I remember when you asked me, do you know any great braiders in X? I was like, oh my God, this sounds like a task. Tell me everything about it.
We always do a global women package around International Women's Day, and we were trying to think of a way to rejuvenate the concept a little bit. And we had Jesse Heyman, our executive editor, had discussed making it focused on beauty. And then we all sat in a room together, and it became quickly clear that something that really united cultures around the world were braids, and something that everyone had a distinct point of view and take on. And so our visuals department pulled off 5 shoots in 4 different continents over 6 weeks. And Margot Imbuba, our beauty editor, really took on the task of doing all the interviews with everyone. And we spoke to a community who braid their hair, 108 braids in keeping with the Buddhist tradition in Tibet. You know, we focused on the Las Fallas Festival in Spain and the way that the women sort of do their hair in these very elaborate, almost Princess Leia-esque donut braids. And Rochelle, Vogue India's editor, suggested both.
Those maybe were my favorite.
Oh, my God. The Indian wedding braids were so beautiful with the jasmine threaded through them. And Choma, what is your braiding experience?
Oh, I've had many. I've had like 14-hour braids that were like tiny micro braids. I wore to the Met one year. Never doing that again. Takes too long. but there's a braider that my friend James Garland, who actually does a lot of the work sometimes on a lot of shoots, and I think with Dior, and she does Mika, and she's the fastest braider I've ever met.
That's so what we anytime did. I want Arden braids did a behind the
really?
A backstage Mika? Braids. Yeah.
Oh, she's so talented.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's this one, like, I think there's this one picture where Anok in my friend's lookbook has braids down to the floor. I mean, it's only Mika could do it because she's so fast. But yeah, I mean, my cousins have done it before in Nigeria. Like, that was fun to have my cousins do it. And then it's like four of your cousins and you're doing it at one time. So the more hands,
so
the merrier,
fun.
I say, with braiding. Yeah, but I haven't had braids in a minute. Maybe it's time
inspiring
for braid renaissance.
The braidazons.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's any other news this week.
Honestly, Kate's like, our brains have been like scrambled by royal nonsense again.
Everyone on our side is all a flutter about TikTok, potential TikTok ban. The House passed the bill that is demanding that TikTok divest from their Chinese owner or the app will be banned in the United States, which is obviously big news here. We actually did a post yesterday on what will you do with your time now if TikTok is banned?
My God.
It's a solid
and people
question.
People were like listing all the books they'll read. Choma, what's your algorithm looking like?
My algorithm is all based on old UK TV shows which I missed in the 2000s. And there's one called The Secret Lives of Kids, I think it is.
Yes.
And it's just like, I could just watch that all day. It's just like, basically a Big Brother house full of 7-year-olds, and they're completely unhinged. And obviously because I don't have kids, or I'm not exposed to kids in the way that you are, Chloe, having two lovely children, I'm just crying with laughter. And there's the guy who posted him is an American, and he has just insane commentary about them. And then there are these other shows which are super problematic that used to be in the 2000s about like a complete body makeover.
Oh my God, those shows.
The
Brit-
I was like,
there was
the
a certain
Brits
kind of British
terrible.
Television in the noughties that was like,
oh my
Wild
God.
West.
It was just like, I'm like clutching my pearls watching breakdowns of it. But yes, problematic British TV and The Secret Life of Children. That is my algorithm.
Giles, tell me about your algorithm.
I got a lot of dog groomers. I got a lot of quote unquote fitness chefs explaining how to consume more protein than a person could possibly ever metabolize. it's good stuff. How about you, Chloe?
I'm so embarrassed. I feel like I still haven't figured out how to get my algorithm right, and so it's like just weird, like homemade clothing things, like. I feel like it's like teenagers like cutting dresses that look like Oscar dresses.
Sounds better than mine.
Sounds way better. Not than yours, Trevor. Sorry, I meant than mine. Yours sounds great.
And also cats and dogs. I like a lot of like dog-cat fighting moments. I don't know how I got onto that, but it's definitely a like.
Oh, yeah. Interspecies pet friendships. 1,000%. Yeah.
The Run-Through will be back in just a moment with Choma's interview with FKA Twigs.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party, or having family over, or even just cooking for yourself, when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration, a kitchen with no space, a toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then, I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
And we're back. Choma, you met with Twigs for the pod. I have to say, I found it so soothing hearing your dulcet voices. It was like ASMR of Twigs talking about Prague disco etiquette.
Doesn't she? She has the most soothing, sweet, celestial voice. It's crazy.
I want her to put me to bed.
I know. And she's so thoughtful. And she will be able to help put you to bed soon, because she'll be putting her album out later this year. And the new songs are great. And, you know, she also has this big movie coming out, The Crow, directed by Rupert Sanders. And I was able to speak to him. And he was talking so much about the chemistry between her and Bill Sarsgaard, who plays The Crow. You know, they have such a great chemistry in the movie. And then I like that she has this whole dictionary of secret words that she loves and has funny names for. She's just as kooky and weird and wonderful as you want her to be. And I like that she was kind of really funny and kind of cheeky, because she's so serious and kind of like has serious talent.
Yeah.
It was sweet to see a more lighthearted side of her and her secret dictionary of weird words. So everybody has that to look forward to, which I thought was quite fun.
Fabulous.
Hi, Twigs. I know you're getting close to handing in your album. How are you feeling? Tell us about the inspiration for the new album. I know we talked about it quite a lot.
For me, the album is really about a sense of agency. And a sense of one's ability to change, whether that's your inner workings or being able to change the things that are within your control and giving yourself the permission and freedom to do so. And for me, it sounds like a simple thing, but I had that revelation dancing, experiencing rave culture. And it's taken me on such a huge journey, you know, 40 years of therapy in one night for me, really.
You are such an amazing storyteller. I remember being on the very edge of my seat when you were describing one particular night out in Prague. And I know you were there filming The Crow. Can you tell us a bit about your time in Prague? Because that was this pivotal moment.
I ended up living in Prague a couple of summers ago now. 3 months I was there, roundabout. And I was there filming The Crow, and it was a very amazing and intense and inspirational time. It was my first lead in a film, and there was just so much to take in. And then we were working on the characters every single day, and I was really out of my comfort zone, actually, in a really beautiful way. But then there's times when you're away and you have multiple days off in a row. So my makeup artist, who I've known since we were teenagers, and my hairstylist, who I adore, we had our little crew, and we would go out and we started to explore Prague. And obviously in Eastern Europe, it's known for its incredible music scene there and race scene, the dance culture there is so authentic and so raw in a way that I had just not experienced actually in London or New York and LA. It really felt like the first time I turned up in East London when I was 19, or the first time I went to Camden when I was 16 years old. You know, those moments of like, I don't know what this is. And I'm always incredibly humbled by culture when it allows me in. There are incredible clubs and raves there, like raves on the side of a motorway. You get in a car and you're driving and you're just in fog, almost in this thick fog, and you think, no, there's nothing here. And the car pulls up and it's on the side of the motorway. And you get out and you think, where am I? And all of a sudden you just hear that thud, you just hear that four thud, and you just go towards it, and it's almost like the mist clears, and there's just all these kids outside this warehouse. And walking into this one club in particular, and the way that the people were, I mean, the etiquette in these places is just sensational. It's like, you know, it's like mosh pits, there's an etiquette. Actually, like, no, there is, there's an etiquette.
What's the etiquette in this particular place? Like, what are the rules?
In these clubs where people are dancing all night, where people are like next to each other, where everyone's crowded together, like enjoying the music, there's an etiquette to make everybody feel connected and make everybody feel safe and make everyone feel a part of everything. And that's the first time that I'd experienced it. But I've got a song on my new album and it's called Room of Fools. And I wrote it in the bathroom of one of these clubs in Prague.
Wow. How that's impressive.
It's called Room of Fools because I just think like sometimes the way that I worry about things, or the way that I can let these little R problems in my reality affect me, it's so foolish. And in these places we are a room of fools, but the lyric is, this room of fools, we make something together. We're open wounds is bleeding out the pressure, because it is like that. It's like we're humans and we have our issues and we have our human flaws, as we should, our perfect human flaws. But in that room, none of it matters. And we're making something so important in that room when we're together.
It is the best feeling in the world. I think as a as a teenager, that was my high. I loved being awake all night dancing. It was the most cathartic thing ever.
Yeah.
It was the best experience. I wanted to ask you what you learned about yourself while working on this new album. And I know that's not a short answer.
One way of putting it is that I'm a perfectionist. I think another way of putting it is that I care, and I take so much pride in my work. You know, I think that craft is the most beautiful thing. Love is practice. You know, you hear about these like yeasts that have been in families to make sourdough bread, and they've been in families for like five generations or six generations. Someone's great, 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 great grandma would have like first started this culture to make bread from. But that's what we're doing, you know, with your new incredible role at Vogue. Like, that's what you're doing. You're like,
Twigs.
No, but that's what you're doing. No, not trying. I was trying is preparing to fail. That's what I always say. Like,
oh my god,
you've
got the best. I know. I mean, I need some of these mantras on my bathroom.
Trust me.
You've got so many.
Trust me, I've got so many. Yeah, trying is preparing to fail. Like, you're doing it and you're making the culture for the next generation. It's not even, you know, when we're making work, it's not about us. It's about who's next. And the amazing thing that I think I've learned on this record is I feel like at this point in my career, I'm making for what's next.
There was a song you also played to me called Usetua. And I thought it was genius because there are so few words to describe the feeling that you experienced. So can you talk about a little bit what it means, how you came up with it?
First of all, I love making up words.
Okay, what other words do you have in the canon that are Twigsisms?
Okay, so one is like called a chabak.
What's that?
Okay, guess first of all, what do you think a chabak is?
A chabak? I just can't get Chewbacca out of my like, I don't know.
Okay, so help. A chabak is like, you know when a guy has like a bald head?
Oh my God.
And he has like a roll, like when he puts his head back, yes, and you can see the roll. Oh my God,
I know exactly that roll in the back of the head.
That's such a buck. Okay, the other one is Quas. What do you think Quas is?
Quas, is it Quas? I don't know, like, it doesn't feel very uplifting. It feels a bit, I don't know, what is it?
I want you to guess. Come on, just make a guess.
I'm trying. Okay, Quas is when someone makes a bad joke.
Okay, no.
No. So,
Quas is, you know when you have a bath and yes. then you let out the plug.
Oh God, the stuff at the air, the bum.
There's stuff around the edge. So you know if you don't God. Like rinse it quick enough and then Ew. You get like the... That's like you get like the oils around that. That's Quas, but it's also Quas has two meanings. It's also like, you know, when you wear a light lip balm or lip gloss and then yes. it gathers on the inside of your mouth. That's Quas.
My
as well.
Least favorite thing. I hate that. But yeah, it happens. It happens in life.
So it happens. And your girlfriend will be like, you've got a bit of Quas. And you're like, okay, I'll do one more and then we'll talk about you sexually. So the one more is called an X heel. An X-heel is, you know, like if somebody gets a text and they're like, oh, that's crazy. Like, oh, amazing. Yeah, yeah. And then you're like, oh, what happened? And they're like, oh, nothing.
That's an X-heel?
Do you know what I mean? An X-heel. So if somebody like gives you a bit of information, like outwardly wants you to know something, but then when you're like, oh, what happened? Then they're like, oh, no, I can't tell you. That's an X-heel.
Oh, frustrating. Don't like an X-heel. Yeah.
Don't like an X-heel. So you sexua is... It's a feeling that, at least in the English dictionary, there is not a word for this. It's really quite a find, I feel. So, you know that feeling of when you've been out dancing all night and you lose 7 hours to music and you look at your phone or your watch and you think, oh my gosh, it's 8 o'clock in the morning and last time you looked it was one. It's because you've been in a state of eusexual. It's also... If you meet somebody that you really like and you just kiss all night and you kiss for 4 hours or 5 hours, you just kiss all night and you're just kissing, you just feel like you lose time and it's like your body's become one and you're almost just like an amoeba. It's like this kind of meditative, like amazing, beautiful physical experience, but it becomes like beyond kissing. You've been in a state of eusexual. For me, it's also the moment before I get a really good idea of pure clarity. Like when everything moves out the way, everything in your mind is completely blank and your mind is elevated. That's eusexual. And that is the only place I want to be now. That's when I feel the most like myself, when everything's completely clear. And, you know, you say like, what have I learned over the past few years? I've just been removing anything that stops me from being in eusexual. It goes really deep for me. Like I had to completely reset my life. Everybody can see very publicly that I've gone through some difficult times over the past few years. And I always knew I would have to heal in front of the public. And that was the scariest thing, to know that I'm somebody that people are looking at and they have seen me broken, they've seen me crying, they've seen me struggling. You know, I have moments of like complete like transcendence of who I ever thought I could be as a human in terms of my inner monologue and in terms of controlling that inner monologue. And it's taken a lot of work on my body, it's taken a lot of work within my diet. You know, I'm pretty private, but I have said before, you know, I live a very non-tox lifestyle now, and that goes for products, it goes for my home, it goes for people that I'm around, collaborators. I'm very strategic now who I surround myself with. Life is so funny. I never thought I'd like be here on the cover of Vogue talking about this like 10 years ago when I was just like rattling around East London like, you know, like a club kid, you know, like just.
Oh my
like
God. You have to tell looks, the like, quick story very quickly about you gluing your eyes shut. So Twigs.
Oh my God.
I mean, I can give it in very brief. Like, Twigs obviously was on the cover of ID. She wasn't even signed at that moment. She was making music, wasn't signed.
she was spotted on the East London line and Matthew Stone spotted her. Her friend Carrie Munden was like, he wants to cast you in this story. You were an extra in it. You ended up on the cover. But the day before, you were mugged.
Yeah. So I'd been out all night, essentially, and I was going home in the morning, but I had a full bondage look on because I'd been at this bondage club and I had my baby hairs and my braids. And it was very much like LP1 era, like the choker, the kind of like full mesh catsuit, the big like platform boots. And it was like just 9 a.m. in Hoxton. Everyone was going to work and I was like going home. Matthew Stone saw me on the tube. He was like, I want to shoot you. So it was the night before. And I was talking to my friend and somebody grabbed my phone out of my hand and clipped me in the eye. Like, I don't think he meant to like fully like wallop me, but in grabbing the phone, like I basically got like punched in the eye, essentially.
Oh, no.
So I turned up on the shoot and one eye like was not fully open and very sore and I couldn't wink. And because I wasn't the main model in the story, Matthew was like, let's just do a cover try, but you've just got like 3 or 4 times to wink. And so I'm trying to wink. And he's like, babes, that looks terrible. Like, can you not wink? And I'm like, I can't. So I said to the makeup artist, I was like, let's glue my eyes shut. And she was like, we can't glue your eyes shut. And I was like, okay, we can't technically, but if you were to go over there and tell me where that eyelash glue is in your bag, I could glue my eyes shut. So she was like, oh my gosh, okay. So I did it myself. Like, squeeze my eye together. I know, glued it together. And went and got the shot. But if you go back and look at the ID cover, it's so funny because you can totally see that my eye is glued shut. Like, it's not a wink. It's more just like a doll.
Yeah, no, it's more like, yeah, it's true, right? It does.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I do want to get to The Crow because... Okay. I felt like hearing you talk about what it was like to, and I interviewed Rupert and he was just,
did you?
He was, he had such amazing things to say. And he was just like, it was instant. I needed someone who was beyond human, someone who was magical. And that was Twigs. And there was just something about her. And I know he cast you without an audition, basically over afternoon tea in London.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? Because this is your first major role. Obviously, you've had acting experience in the past and you've acted as a child. And why was it so transformative for you?
It was just humbling to go into an environment which it's going with or without you. That set is moving with or without you. And I was just so lucky to have Bill as my partner in this because he was so generous and kind, and we instantly had such a good connection. And in between every single take, I felt like we would always talk about such beautiful, deep things. And it just meant that I felt so comfortable being with him. And there was a moment actually where it really clicked for me, and it was probably like halfway through filming, and we had a scene where we're in the bath together, and I lost myself in that scene. I wasn't Twigs anymore. And it's the first time that I've ever felt that, if I'm honest with you, where I wasn't myself. I was Shelley. I was Shelley in the bath with the man that I was falling in love with. And I've not had that before. So, and obviously, I'm sure actors, you know, they kind of probably have that all the time. But
some of them can't break character, seems.
Yeah, some of them can't break character, yeah, exactly. It's just so nice to have been doing something for so long. I mean, I started working professionally in this industry when I was 12. Mm. So it's so nice, like, so many years later to still be learning and to still be the baby on set. How lucky am I, you know? And
yeah.
And Rupert was incredible, and Bill was just, like, the sweetest. he was always like just making sure that my face was in the light. If I'd forgotten, he'd just like gently like move me and like have it be part of the scene, and just kind of, you know, really helped me. And by the end, I really understood it. And actually, since then, I've shot Mother Mary as well, and The Crow really paved the way for me to be the actor that I was on Mother Mary. And then I went back and I had to do a reshoot for one of the scenes for The Crow. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, Rupert was like, wow, you know, like you just got into it so quickly. And I just was like, yeah, I've just been on this crazy like acting exploration for the past 18 months and it's finally clicking. And I actually just got cast as a lead in another film as well. Which
oh my
shooting.
God, congratulations. That's huge. We have to talk about the shoot. Obviously, I was so nervous. It was my first... it's my first photo cover. I was so thrilled that we had such an amazing creative team, Johnny Dufour shooting and Ib Kamara, amazing, amazing stylist and creative director and designer of Off-White. And, you know, my dream girl, Twigs. So it was a real, such an amazing team. And to see how you handled the scenario, I mean, we were shooting outside on top of a cab and then we went rogue onto the underground. Like it was like your stamina. I think physically I just saw like how strong you are physically and mentally, like how strong, like, and how focused you are to hold that focus all day. And it's quite incredible. You know, obviously you have an amazing eye for fashion and it was very collaborative in the fashion choices. And I think you were thinking very much about how you want to be seen in the world now. And I was very interested in how you had a character for yourself, you know, and you talked about this alien who'd landed. So will you tell everyone about that? Because I enjoyed hearing about that.
The character just sort of, it comes out almost on the day. It's not something I'd necessarily thought about before.
Wow.
For me, the woman was an alien from space and she'd landed on Earth. And in some ways she was vulnerable. And in some ways, she was taking in so much information about the city and London and all of like the amazing hustle and bustle, being so sensitive and like wide-eyed about the whole thing. But then in the back of her mind, she knew that she could conquer this city in some way. And she knew that she would like learn to be human and be able to impact the city where she now was. So I really wanted the styling to be very stripped back. This is the beginning of a new era for me, and I've been working with Georgia Pendlebury a lot just to define like who I am now, and mainly based just around conversations, actually. And so with the Vogue cover, I just wanted to give myself the space to move into this era. So I wanted everything to be very stripped back. I think famously, like, I know I can take a lot fashion-wise. Like, I can take a lot. I can take a lot of prints. I can take a lot of color, a lot of makeup, a lot of hair. And that's been amazing for the past decade to show that side of myself. But I feel like I don't need that so much anymore. And I want to try something new, something pure is the word that Ivy and I kept on talking about as part of this new, I guess, like ethos that I'm living my life by. I went right back to zero. So I lived a lot of time only wearing a certain uniform to create in. So I had like a series of clothes that I would call my blues when I was going to the studio. And all of the clothes were this beautiful sort of worn in blue. And I was sourcing all of these clothes from Japan, these like worn Japanese, super like slouchy, comfy, like sportswear silhouettes. And I would only wear them every single day, really, for about, I mean, almost a year, to be honest with you, maybe a bit longer. To give myself the space to minimize my decisions that I was making in the morning so that I could go in and I could put that brain power into the music. And I took out all of my piercings, like no septum ring, like nothing. I mean, I've obviously as well, like famously been known for being heavily pierced. Everything came out. I dyed my hair back dark, wore no makeup, like just hair back in a bun or a hat or a wrap. So I didn't have to do it and just go to the studio every single day. And so when I've shot the Vogue cover, it's really the first time I've started to come out of that place.
Mm.
I've gone really like moved away from gold to silver, like accessories. I just think for me, it's like a purer, harder metal, like element to be working with now. It makes me feel more tough and more grounded, and it reminds me of a lot of the sounds in the album, whereas Magdalene, a lot of the metallic sounds sounded gold. in this record, they feel silver to me. So I've been changing my jewelry. It's like a whole thing, but I really love it. I love the process.
I love that you see sounds in colors, because other artists have talked about that too. I'm always intrigued by that. To see
But not in that way. Synesthesia. I definitely don't have that. It's more like a kind of, it's like a taste in the mouth, or I can't really explain it.
It was lovely hearing about your relationship with your mom and your childhood. And I couldn't believe you remember dreaming as a baby in your crib. I was like, girl, I can barely remember last week, let alone when I was like two. I was like, earliest childhood memory was basically in the womb.
Yeah, I remember so much. I remember being able to fully have cohesive thoughts with words in my head and being nonverbal.
Wow.
I remember being able to think in full sentences, but not being able to have the words to express how I was feeling. I also remember as a very young child finding adults extremely frustrating that they couldn't just understand. Like, I remember feeling like a big frustration, the fact that they couldn't understand what I was saying either, and maybe getting it wrong. So in my head, I'd be like, okay, I need this right now. But then all that would come out would be like, bleh. And then like I would have the wrong thing and I'd be like, ah, no. I remember that thing. And I remember the first time being potty trained.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I do. I remember being, I mean, it must have been so, I must have, I don't know, it must have been like 18 months or younger, but I remember like gaining control over my body and being able to make it to my potty. And I remember thinking in my head that connection had happened, and that was such a relief for me because it's frustrating for me not to be in control of my body. I mean, I remember the last time I breastfed. It goes back like
My mum breastfed me till I'm three, and I don't remember.
No, I remember. It's a hard time. It's the first trauma. Arguably the first trauma.
We also talked about social media and about handling and navigating that when you're quite sensitive to the world. And I know that you often go off for months at a time from social media. Like, how do you cope with interacting with that space?
I'm so much more creative and so much more authentic when I'm not on it. I believe that we all are. Like, I've recently like started really connecting with my community on Discord, and that for me has been a really safe space for me to connect with people that like my music, because we have like very open conversations about the etiquette within the space, and we're even reading books together and discussing the chapters of the books. Sometimes it goes off. Like the people on my Discord like have me laughing so much. Like, it was the stuff that comes up. I mean, we were having like a whole chat about back rooms the other day. Oh my gosh. And then like they wanted to know what toothpaste I use.
What?
It was so funny. I don't know, but it just turned into this whole thing. It turned into this like whole thing, and then everyone wanted to buy this toothpaste. It was like, it was honestly, I was crying.
Should I
like,
be I
was,
buying like, it? I mean, right honestly, now, I'm a Sensodyne girl. I'm like, I know, do I need to switch brands? Honestly,
I don't know. Like, it's just got so meta. The whole thing got so meta. But then I think the toothpaste I used was very niche. And so then everybody bought it, and then it sold out. One of my fans then went and changed my Wikipedia page to make personal part all about this toothpaste that had sold out online, but and the dates that everything happened on Discord. And I was just like, I was crying. Like, I was literally, I was like crying that then my Wikipedia page became like an homage to the toothpaste.
Oh my God. That's
it's
hilarious.
So silly.
Keep doing what you're doing. We so looking forward to the album. Thank you again for playing those songs for me. They keep playing in my head, and I can't wait for the world to hear them.
Yeah, no, I can't wait. This album's been the most amazing project to work on, and I've met so many incredible people on the way, and I can't wait to share like all of my collaborators. Thank you so much for having me on the cover of Vogue. It's like
it's a
dream come true. Well, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Thank you so much for talking to me.
That's it for today's show. See you next week. Bye.
The Run Through with Vogue is a production of Condé Nast. The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns, with engineering from Jake Loomis, Gabe Quiroga, and James Yost. It is mixed by Mike Kutchman. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio. Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out.